out for it. All right, then. It's 48 seconds after the hour of 12, and this, the month of August, in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed end. Ojifera Studios of AM 570 Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. It's the Rick Emerson Show, live from beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. It does smell like something's burning, doesn't it? Here's the exchange that happened earlier in the studio, by the way. Sarah came in and she's, "Do you smell something burning?" And I already knew what it was, and so I just casually waved her away. Don't you worry about that. Don't you worry your pretty little head. Which is exactly what what's-his-name says to O.J. Simpson, I think, in The Towering Inferno. So there you go. But you can either have a studio that smells like a butt, or you can have a studio that smells like this today. Because here's what we've learned. Will, in the engineering department, we were complaining for the longest time that it was stifling hot in here and smelled like the inside of a sock. And we found that it was as we suspected all along. Because remember, for the longest time, we were ruminating about why it is that the studio was always 40 degrees hotter than everywhere in the building, and why there was just a whole trunk full of funk in here. And it turns out, it's not even really a matter of the air conditioner not having been on. It turns out that all these vents in the ceiling were, in fact, sealed shut. So we really were just breathing. I mean, this is a more or less airtight studio. We got these thick-ass windows here. We got this door that seals completely to keep the sound out. And then so the only air that comes in or out of here is these vents in the ceiling, which were, in fact, closed, bolted, and sealed shut. So we were, in fact, sitting here for every day, for like 4 hours, in an airtight sarcophagus. The three of us, and then, you know, sometimes Clyde, in here just breathing in and exhaling out the same old stale air every day. It's exactly why it smelled so bad. So they've opened now the vents. They've done it on exactly the same day that there's a large painting project happening one floor up, which means that there's now latex paint fumes being pumped right into here.
Either that or a methamphetamine lab.
Yeah. Yes. Probably not that. So if we drop that at some point during today's program, you'll know why that is. All right, it's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com. In just a moment, we'll welcome mailman Chris, official stenographer of the Rick Emerson Show. We will track those things I'm going to try to get to today, and those things that I'm guaranteeing. And apparently Scotty just waved me back into his little room there, his little hovel where he works, and apparently everybody now has their own sounder. Everyone on Earth now comes with a theme song. And there's something he's, God only knows, he's created something for Mailman Chris. So we'll get to that in a moment. You know something that I wonder about, and I'm telling everybody in advance, I don't really want to know the answer to this. It's a thing that I think I prefer having, as Spinal Tap would say, best left unsolved. It's in that Britney clothes that Scotty made, where that guy says, "Britney, one more thing before you go." And my question is, and if you know the answer, don't tell me. Because in my head, it's somehow better just being magical and a mystery. I don't know who that guy is. Maybe it's Scotty. No, see, I can tell out of my
answer.
Peripheral vision. I don't want to know. I can see. See, what did I just say? Don't tell me.
Because people are going to call and tell you anyway, so why don't we just get
They're
it out
not.
Of the way?
They're not. People respect my wishes, unlike some of us. Unlike other people, I could mention Sarah Dillon. The people, that's capital T, capital P, they respect my desires. And when I say that I would prefer not to have the mystery ruined...
When do I respect your desires?
I'm saying you don't.
So I'll tell you.
So just now, as I'm like... As I was just saying, I don't wish to know the answer to this.
I going to know the answer. I didn't know where you were going with that.
Here's the best part is just after I said, "If you know, please don't tell me," out of my peripheral vision, I could see you moving like a panther in the jungle, reaching for the microphone to tell me. To tell me exactly what I just said I didn't want to know. Can you pot that down for a second, the mono bed, and I'll play this. Here's what I'm talking about. You'll hear the guy speaking right here.
Brittany, before you go, there's something I want you to have.
See, my problem is this.
That's so great. There's like 900 different sound effects there. It's like a jet strafing the Mekong Delta there at the end.
Can I tell you now?
No. See, but of all those sound effects, the one that's the most intriguing and mysterious is the guy going, Brittany, before you leave, but I don't want to know where it's from.
I'm
going
to write it on
paper. Don't. Write it and seal it. And that way it's up to me whether I learn or not. You know what I mean? This is like when the doctor says, now would you like to know whether you're predisposed to Alzheimer's? You know, and then it's like, it's your choice. Well, all right. It's 503-733-2970. If you'd like to engage with us electronically, you can do it. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Let us now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
A postman is a person in your neighborhood.
Okay, that's funny. Mailman Chris, official stenographer of the Rick Emerson Show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Okay, that's pretty great. And it's short. Listen to that. It was only like 3 seconds long. Right to the point. Over. Done. All right. We should say that, Chris, you came down to, you and your lovely bride came down to Dante's last night.
Thank you for the vodka soda, Chris.
You're welcome.
For the Rockstar Supernova viewing party and so forth. Are we ready to move forward today?
We are.
All right. What are you doing over there?
They're always dirty
every
napkins.
Every day we come in, they're like dirty, crusty napkins in here.
Crusty. You had to say crusty. You couldn't just say a dirty napkin, a used napkin. You had to point out that it was crusty. There are certain things that the word crusty should not be used in front of, at least not in mixed company. That would be towels, socks, napkins of any kind. These are things that they may be crusty, but they don't need to be announced as being such to the whole room. Alright, so here's what we're gonna do. We are going to... Yes, or clown, Scotty. Thank you. We're gonna, guarantees a few things here and do the forward promote, as they say. Encouraging you, the listening audience, to be listening for a longer period of time today as we engage in today's broadcast. Tim, what watches do we even have today? I didn't even write them into. We have a Cannibal watch.
We do have a Cannibal watch left over from
yesterday. We have that second half of Mondays that we never got to yesterday, so we'll do that.
Still out my black bag. I'll find it.
All right. We have a Cannibal watch coming up today. Rockstar recap. We have a special installment of the Onion Radio News Desk featuring Mel Gibson. We'll get to that. We have the Week in Geek today. We have Kristen from accounting who will join us. This is part of the Rockstar Recap. We have the Rockstar Recap with Kristen. Jen Lane may or may not be here. I'm not gonna swear to that one right here. And we will get It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard. Also, to satisfy that guy who emailed in about this yesterday, we'll get to that, the Tim Riley Eskimo commercial from the days of yore. We will get to that today. Sometime next week, speaking of, we talk about Super Digital sometimes and how they'll take these reel-to-reels you got in your basement and they'll turn them into, they'll archive them digitally. I gotta get that done to this big commercial reel I have at home, which is me for the first 8, 9, 10 years of my radio career just shilling for all kinds of businesses I didn't know anything about. Businesses I didn't care about, businesses I couldn't have explained to you at gunpoint. But there I was, laboring long hours in the production room trying to make... And here's the thing, when you work in radio, especially when you're young and foolish and naive enough to think that this is something you can really make into a fruitful career, that you try to make every commercial like a little mini opera. Every commercial is some sort of grand guignol theater experience.
Absolutely.
Every, you know, this is, now the commercial that I'm doing for this drapery store, this is really going to set me apart. This, I'll win a Clio for this for sure. Because you always think that Dick Orkin's going to pick up the phone and call you and go, that's a fantastic drapery commercial, young man. How would you like me to lift you out of this life of drudgery? That never happens. The commercial plays and then is forgotten about. And then you realize it's on your demo reel and that it's terrible and will never get you a job anywhere. And stuff. All right, Chris, have you, somewhere in that morass of discussion, did you get a list of the things we're guaranteeing?
I got the Cannibal Watch, the Rockstar Recap with Kristen, the Onion Radio News, Week in Geek, the worst song ever, and Tim's Eskimo commercial.
Indeed. And at the end of the program, I will owe a push-up to the Sarah Dillon Collective for each item not gotten to. So there you go. Thank you, Chris, and we'll talk to you at the end of the program.
Excellent.
All right, there you go. Mailman Chris, ladies and gentlemen, who's at the Rockstar Supernova taping last night. We're joined here today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented, perky and happy to be here, Sarah Dillon.
Hello.
Okay, at the City Desk, Tim
hey.
Riley. No, you seemed like you were done. Your inflection indicated that was sort of the mailman Chris sounder of greetings. It was, you know, you said what needed to be said, and then you were finished.
It's from Oops, I Did It Again.
I didn't even hear anything you just said. Here's what I heard. I heard, my boob is one-sided again.
No, I said, it's from Oops, I Did It Again.
What's from what?
The guy.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
The Britney. There's something I need to tell you before you go.
Why do you have to do this? Why do you have to ruin all my joy?
Because...
You know what you are? You're like a little boy who stomps on earthworms after the rain. That's exactly what you are.
I love earthworms.
Speaking of which, we were walking along the sidewalk last night, walking my dog. Lara stepped right on a slug. Yeah! Yeah, think about that.
At least she wasn't barefoot.
Goes right through... No, she was. Goes right through your toes like springtime mud. Tim Riley's working on the following story for you today. Good
times. Okay. Man, we're going to hear from Joe Lieberman and Cynthia McKinney.
Joe Mentum.
Mel Gibson indulged in years of cocaine, booze binges, and torrid affairs of the flesh. If tabloid reports are to be believed.
Sweet, then they are.
Dave Navarro's been dumped by the other woman. Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn will be engaged, will get married. They'll be known as Boniston.
All right.
We may see Tomcat's baby picture soon. And remember 9/11? 30% of Americans don't.
Nine. No. Nothing. 503-733-2970. Rick. This is Todd the Corpse. Come on. Rick, I would like to know where that quote in the Britney sounder comes from, but now I don't get to because you don't want to know. Can't you just plug your ears while Sarah tells the rest of us? Selfish killjoy bastard. But it's from the video?
Yeah, didn't you ever see that? Well, terrible in the way the video is made, but you would have loved it. She's in her, like, red pleather, like, shiny outfit.
I was thinking the red, and she's sitting on the moon or whatever. And
yeah, and she has the long extensions. It's the video. She looks the prettiest.
See, why was I thinking that that was not that? Okay, I know. Here's the thing. I know the song Oops, I Did It Again. And I know the video where she's in the red pleather sitting on the moon or whatever, and she's being lifted up. But for some reason, I thought that was the video for, what was that song? Crazy? Not You Drive Me Crazy. God, there was some other song. It was like a one-word title, Lucky. I thought that was the video for Lucky.
No, that's the one where she's the starlet and the paparazzi are always chasing her.
Why do I know this? Why? Why?
I don't know why I do
this. Doesn't make any sense. What? You know what's a great song?
It's from a breakdown in that song.
You know what's a great Britney Spears song, and I mean this sincerely. And I don't even know the title of it. It's that song where she overdoses in the bathtub. You know what I'm talking about? What is that Britney Spears video where she takes the sleeping pills and overdoses in the bathtub? And
it's like an every time I try to
my wings have been so denied. No, that's something else. No, that's an Iron Maiden song. But I know every time I fall, it has like a little music box sound to it.
That has her killing herself in the bathtub.
Total, that's what I'm saying. It's a great. That's a great song right there. And I can say that because I know that she had nothing to do with it. She's just incidental to that. That's a really great song, as is Baby One More Time. Two indisputably great pop songs from her. And Toxic. She really did have a trifecta of fantastic songs. And they will be acknowledged as such. Also, I am making this prediction. It is now, 2006?
Yes.
She is, how old?
24?
When she's like 33, 35, 37, she's going to have a big comeback in Vegas like Cher, Madonna style. I'm making that prediction right now.
Popping out the kids for a second.
She will become some sort of kitsch object when she's in her 30s. A good
like a lava lamp?
Yes. Exactly like a lava lamp.
I think you were right the other day when you called her the new Anna Nicole Smith.
She really is. She really is, man. And you watch that video where she's just... And that accent is so pronounced that it doesn't even sound real.
In that video.
Yeah, the YouTube video where she's like, and so I was wondering about whatever. I couldn't even watch it all the way through.
Where do I find the cement pond?
She's going to get married in the town of Dogpatch. I couldn't even watch it all the way through. She was so stupidly painful. No, that's not the right word. She was painfully stupid. Like, you know how there's that phrase that's too bad stupidity doesn't hurt? You know? Well, it does. It hurts us. It hurts other people. That stupidity hurts the people around them. And that's what that video is, man. So I just had to turn it off.
Where are my critters?
Totally. like a regular Geordie Merrill accent. And stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, let us now go to the city desk with your personal savior, Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the city desk, Tim Riley.
From high until the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News. Me, Tim Riley, reporting. Have some breaking news. The rise and fall of the stars of the 80s sitcom Different Folks, Strokes, I should say, will be chronicled in a new TV movie. The Washington Post reports NBC Sweet. Will air Behind the Camera, Different Strokes, September 4th. Original series actor Gary Coleman, who played Arnold, and Tom Bridges, who played Willis, have agreed to appear.
Oh,
Dana Plato
themselves?
Is unavailable. Yes.
Well, to make it easier to work with.
Let's see here. Bridges.
Just sit there immobile, Dana.
It doesn't say who's going to play Conrad Bain.
He's still alive.
Is he?
Conrad Bain? Wait.
Is he?
Oh, God damn it. Now I don't know.
Is he hireable?
I don't know. Presumably, the older you get, the less say you really have in that anyway. Mm. To think where your relatives just bring you down on a hand car and prop you up in a corner. Conrad Bain, dead or alive? Someone find out now. Thank you. That is all. I believe he's alive. Who did I hear the other day? Well, there's that Richard Dawson unpleasantness that we had. Well, who did I hear the other day still alive? Charlie Pride.
Yeah.
Charlie Pride, who I guess I didn't think he was dead. I just forgot he existed. Charlie Pride is one of those. Did you have to play Charlie Pride songs?
No, that was considered too old in the 90s.
Really? Oh, that's right, because you played
the baby acts.
Yeah. That's right. In the 90s, you were playing a lot of, like, Little Texas and so forth. Yeah, all right. Anyway, so Different Strokes. Boy, that is just television eating its own right there. That is the snake eating its tail. Where they create the show, they ruin everyone's lives, and then they come back and make a TV movie about it later. That is just, that show is, there a show that has more bad luck associated with it? It's really just that one. That's the gold standard for everything going south, right?
Yep.
I mean, not even the Partridge Family can touch that, and Buffy's dead. So, all right. Buffy dead a long time. There's Tim Riley.
One of the most closely watched primary elections of the year. Yes.
I'm sorry, that paint has a decidedly flatulent odor to it now.
That, because you looked a little guilty when I first asked you, and you're just like, I don't know what it is.
Yes, I had Thai for...
I'd rather be exposed to asbestos than give the choice.
No, because Will warned me about this. He's like, so yes, you'll be dead by the end of today's broadcast. So I fixed that by opening the vents for you. They are doing some painting upstairs, so you might have a little paint odor. First of all, it's not a little odor. Secondly, it doesn't smell like paint.
These are the vents of the parking garage.
It really smells as though we're below some sort of sewage treatment.
Oh, he's alive.
Conrad Bain alive.
How old is he?
Wait, let me guess. Don't tell me. 74.
No, he's getting older than that.
He's 73.
Yeah, in your face, Tim Riley.
Wow.
Wait, are you just reading that off the page? What doesn't it say?
Well, it was born 1923.
So he's 83.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right.
That's more like
it. Still alive, though. All right.
That.
Okay.
Conrad
Bain derailed the whole thing.
I can't remember where we were interrupted myself.
I was saying that the paint smells like an unpleasant bodily emission.
All right. So that's been established. Let's talk about Joe Lieberman then.
Joe Lieberman can play Conrad Bain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, seriously now. Picture Conrad Bain. You know, Mr. Drummond, and then picture Joe Lieberman, slick back that hair a little bit, and then put him in a suit and have him descending a banister with what's her name, you know, as the maid Pearl, and he could be Conrad Bain. He really could. Attention, Joe Lieberman. There's your new career.
Meanwhile, Joe has followed through on his word. He ran as an independent after losing the Democratic primary to Ned Lamont. That, according to Connecticut Secretary of State.
This is number one?
Yes, it is.
Dan Papermaster from Joe Lieberman's campaign came in at 9:01 to our office with two very large boxes of signatures.
Sorry, you're going to need to clear out your desk, Joe.
Them.
Democrats are rallying behind Ned Lamont, the anti-war candidate.
Who rallies behind a guy named Ned?
Apparently, his grandfather was one of the founders of Harvard or Yale or one of those places.
Yeah, whatever.
Senator Chris Dodd, Lieberman's Connecticut Democratic colleague, supported Lieberman but quickly endorsed Lamont.
People have had enough, and we're providing a new direction. And Ned Lamont and his enthusiastic people have had enough.
They're providing a what?
And we're providing a new direction. And Ned Lamont and his enthusiastic campaign is helping propel that. I support him.
That's fantastic. Excellent.
That's what friends are for.
Seriously, the fickle finger of fate. Is this Joe who? That's genius. Excellent. Did you see that Lieberman, though? He's running on the... What is that party called? It's Connecticut for Lieberman.
This is Connecticut for Lieberman.
Yeah, and he's doing that, by the way, because if he was just Joe Lieberman, he would appear half, because the ballots are done alphabetically, and he's doing that so that he can be at the top of the ballot. That's exactly why he's doing that.
Well, Joe says, as an independent, he'll have a lot of support.
They're almost too sad to play. All right, let's all brace ourselves.
I'm going to have the support of people of Connecticut. That's the kind of campaign we're going to run.
No.
We're going to forget the old politics of division, and we're going to go forward and try to build unity around shared goals for the future.
You already lost.
You've been voted out. You do not have the support of you don't have the support of anyone. Chris, let's listen again. Chris Dodd, longtime Joe Lieberman supporter.
People have had enough
of
and
Joe Lieberman
providing a new direction. And Ned Lamont and his enthusiastic campaign is helping propel that. I support him.
Whatever. All right.
Best of luck to my good friend Joe Lieberman.
Seriously, man. That's like McCartney changing the locks like 5 seconds after Heather Mills walks out. Oh, there you go. Good times for
Lieberman
everyone.
Lieberman is asked on the Today Show if he's fallen out of touch with the voters of Connecticut.
What I haven't lost touch with is fulfilling my constitutional responsibility as a senator to do what I think will protect our national security. I think it would be a disaster for us, our troops, Iraq, and the whole Middle East if we did what my opponent wants to do and pull all of our troops out by a deadline.
He's doing that stupid thing of not referring to the opponent by name. You've lost. He's no longer your... The opponent is when the battle is still happening, when you are still competing with someone. When there is opposite, you're done. He's now the victor. You are the loser. Go home. I was talking to Chris Neathen from Oregon Live about this last night. He was at Dante's, and we were talking about MoveOn.org, how the Democratic Party is sort of like, an alien, where he gets the fetus in his chest, and then it, like, pops out of him, you know, because the fetus ingests inside.
Huh?
It'll all make sense. It's like the little alien creature that sits in your stomach and then jumps out at dinner time. That's what MoveOn.org is to the Democrats. They're destroying the Democratic Party, which is fine with me. Destroying the Democratic Party from within. They are the Christian coalition of the Democratic Party. Because remember how 15 years ago the Christian coalition just routed the Republicans from the inside, and that's why everything got made over in the image of George W. Bush and everything became a Lee Atwater campaign at that point, and that's exactly what MoveOn.org is doing. That's fine with me. They're doing the Lord's work. And MoveOn.org is really satisfying to me because they just have no, I'm not going to say they have no scruples, but they have no allegiance to the old order. MoveOn.org, they don't care. They'll just, if you cross them, if they are displeased by you, they will do what they just did to Joe Lieberman and make sure that you never win anything ever again. And I, for one, welcome our new reptilian overlords. Let's talk to, Jim. Hello, sir.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
What's up?
Charlie Pride, very much alive.
Charlie Pride, alive, and I believe playing at an event for our sister station, KUPL, sometime later this month.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I actually drove by it there. He lives down the street from the aunt and uncle in Surprise, Arizona. I said to the wife, looky, there goes the Charlie Pride.
That's a real nice Mercedes. Did you really say looky?
Yeah, I said, looky, there goes the Charlie Pride. And, of course, you didn't know who he was. So,
But
another good way for you to find out who's dead and alive, I think, is just find out who's played at the casinos down there just at the coast.
That is true. He's probably straight from Branson at this point.
I know he's played the coast. I've seen his smiling picture up there on the board.
I shouldn't poke fun. I like Charlie Pride. I like him, too. It's unfortunate that he kind of fell out of favor with country radio, especially because... I mean, just say what he is known for. He is a black man who,
right.
And that is a rarity in country
piercing
music.
Piercing eyes.
Are they?
Known for his piercing blue gray eyes.
Yeah, are they? And he had that great album called There's this great big. I mean, it was not scandalous as such, but it was. I know that there were certain factions of the country audience back in the day who did not want to accept him because, again, he was a black man playing,
right.
You know, to a largely white redneck audience, and this great album. Charlie Pride, he was famously had this album called There's a Little Bit of Hank in Me, and it's like a picture of him posing with a photograph of Hank Williams Jr., which my father was just infuriated by. My father's just a big bigot a-hole, was just completely infuriated by that. So, country is now, at least contentless sort of hit country, is exclusively white, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody.
NASCAR crowd.
Yeah, I can't.
That guy that does the hip-hop, the black hip-hop, I don't know his name, but there's one black gentleman.
Oh, they do have
like,
one.
The guy.
He does a black version of hip-hop.
Okay. Jim, we have to end this call now. Oh, wait, hold on. But wait, don't go anywhere. Stay right there. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to end this call using this was sent to us today. We were saying we needed a sound effect with which to feign phone problems to end calls. You have a, this is a fantastic call. Don't take it as a personal slight, but we're going to test it on you. Okay, hold on. So this is in case there was a call that was bad. So anyway, and, oh, no, I'm sorry. There you go. Oh, that's too bad. We lost him. Yeah, that's unfortunate. That's genius.
That is.
All right, thank you, sir. Okay, well, let me play this onion here, and we'll go right into the break. Coming up after the break, who is he? Is it Bob Costantini?
It is.
Bob Costantini. We will be talking to Bob Costantini. I did not book Baumgarten today for fear that he would go nuts again about the Lieberman thing, especially since I told him Lieberman was going to lose, and he chose not to believe me. So that he has been hoist by his own petard. Ladies and gentlemen, back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show.
Mel Gibson launches rockets into Israel. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Sources inside the Pentagon are reporting that actor Mel Gibson fired over 40 rockets into Israel early this morning and shows no sign of lowering his hostilities. The actor's Humvee was sighted at the Israel-Lebanon border before dawn, shortly before the intensive barrage of Zelzal-2 missiles began. Gibson's agent Daniel Shepard is helping out with targeting.
Look, Mel Gibson needs to follow his creative vision, all right, wherever that leads him.
Gibson's handlers say he will re-intensify his rocket attack on the Jewish homeland once he finalizes negotiations to star in Lethal Weapon 5. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Best sound effect. I'm going to use that all
you
the time.
You really just threw me off. I thought there was something wrong with the board.
See, it's convincing, yeah. Isn't it? Eric created that for us. It's called Rick Emerson Phone Problem Solver. And this all stems from that guy yesterday. God love him. But we were talking to, was it Baumgarten?
Yes.
Who we avoided today like the plague. No offense.
See, I feel like this is the beginning of an awkward relationship with Baumgarten.
There's
some line that was crossed yesterday, and if you don't, because it takes a lot for you to feel awkward talking to someone.
I didn't feel awkward as such. It was just sort of, here's the thing about Gary Baumgarten, and we'll get Bob Costantini to talk about this, whether he thinks so or not, is that Gary just goes crazy once or twice a year. And Tim and I were talking, I think it's an East Coast thing.
It's an East Coast thing. People yell about things and then it's over with.
Really, it's, you know, I ordered lox, you know, and then wham, phone gets slammed and then they're fine.
They're like very passionate later. About their opinions.
They're fiery people. Yes. So this guy Brandon called up and was like, I'd like to drone on endlessly about Joe Lieberman and the... And it would have been so handy just to have the... Brandon, hello? Oh, damn. So Eric created that out of the goodness of his heart. We'll talk to Dave here in a moment as well. Let's welcome from the Hill,
from
CNN the radio correspondent, Bob Costantini. How are you, sir?
Alrighty, now it's my turn, eh?
Hey. No, you're fine, Bob.
All right.
We're just working on your self-esteem right now. That's your issue. We're trying to make you understand you're not. You may be a fill-in on paper, but you are full-time in our hearts.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's
I feel
true.
Like a full-timer too. The way it's been going lately.
Well, yeah, because everybody's gone or in combat training or practicing being kidnapped. It's all very strange.
Yes, it's. I've been quite busy, actually, surprisingly, even though it's supposed to be slow time here in Washington.
No. It's not that everything. This is a time of great upheaval, Bob Costantini. Just to finish. So here, the thing about Gary Baumgarten, who we love, by the way, we've been talking to that guy for like 6 years, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And with the exception of like about an 18-month period where we were with a company that did not, well, long story short. Anyway, by like 6 years, we've been talking to him. And it is a thing, though, where he'll be fine for about 6 months. And then there will be some news story that just it triggers something in him. Like MySpace was the last time, because he's got a teenage daughter, I believe.
Yes.
And we were talking about MySpace, and, you know, and just quite innocent. None of us have kids, and so we were quite innocently discussing it. And apparently, that coincided with him having had some horrifying, I don't know, the discovery or realization. He'd recently become very unnerved about MySpace.
Sure.
Vis-a-vis teenage girls and how they could use it to get into mischief and so forth. And so I mentioned MySpace, And literally, it was like we'd kicked his cat off a cliff or something. It was he just lost it, not at us, but just sort of in our, just sort of near us. He just lost it over MySpace and just uncorked this ferocious anti-MySpace rant. It was pretty great, actually.
I have two teenage daughters myself,
so you know the MySpace angst. But man, yeah. You got the feeling that he was like a pro wrestler getting ready to go into a cage match with those guys. It was great, and he did this yesterday when I noted that Joe Lieberman was going to lose yesterday and was going to lose everything he ever ran for the rest of his life from now on. And I noted that he had reached what productivity experts call his level of incompetence, which means that the theory of level incompetence, if for those who do not know it, it states that every time you do a job without screwing up, you are promoted. And that eventually, by that logic, you will eventually, inevitably, be promoted into a position that is beyond your abilities and you will fail. And that is called reaching your level of incompetence. Every time you do something right, they'll give you more responsibility. By definition, you will eventually reach a point where the responsibility outweighs your ability and you will fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lieberman is at that point. And it is a long, slow slide downward from here. And I know that's not really what you're calling about, but I just had to make. But I said this to him yesterday, and Baumgarten just, it's like, I don't know, it's like I told my mom the Pope was an alien or something. You know, he lost it. So, so we passed over him today. We're going to be talking.
I'm just a fill-in guy. Don't worry.
We're going to be talking to Ed McCarthy instead, because Cynthia McKinney's a less polarizing figure.
Yes.
I don't wish to be a scaremonger. I will leave that to the other Portland talk radio hosts who will do their part to jack up terrified white people in the suburbs. I'm simply curious about this.
Sure.
Tell me about these Egyptian students. There's 11 of them who came into America on visas or whatever, and then they all vanished at once.
Yes, they were supposed to be going to Montana State University.
And where all the Egyptians go.
Which is, they were part of an actual...
Every Egyptian group. Dreams of going to Montana, Bob Costantini.
They were part of a larger group. I guess maybe the university recruits there.
Uh-huh.
But they were part of a larger group that arrived at JFK Airport last month, and we have a little bit of breaking news for you.
Oh, wait, let me get my breaking news sounder. Hold on. No, wait, hold on. All right.
The three of them are now in custody, as opposed to one of
Fantastic.
Them.
Fantastic, excellent.
A little earlier today.
Well done.
That'll teach him.
Well done. Now,
three
this is...
custody. Now, because... Two of them picked up in New Jersey, one in Minnesota.
Okay, see, because I don't mean that... I mean, look, I don't mean to be an ugly American, but 11 Egyptian students come in, they come to JFK, they're all supposed to report at the same school, and then they all vanish.
Well,
I mean, it is very... I mean, it does sort of scream like we're up to no good.
Well, when 11 out of 17... do disappear, of course, that's going to prompt some action.
Yeah.
That is what has started this. And FBI officials are taking pains to emphasize that they have no particular indication or any credible or imminent threat is being posed by these students. And that's what they're trying to tell us. But, of course, they are in violation of their visa to begin with. The visas to begin with, if they are not reporting to the school where they are supposed to be, to which they were supposed to report late last month.
It does seem like, I mean, look, let's assume that they're not up to no good. Let's assume that they're just misguided youths or whatever. But it seems like at this point, as I hate to use this phrase, but in the post-9/11 world, it's simple, I mean, like even like your reptile brain, even like the low-level intelligence in your head would tell you that if you are an Egyptian coming to America on a visa, you don't want to screw around because they're going to screw you right back.
No, and it's there is some speculation, and including the idea that they're in different parts of the country right now. There's some speculation that they all broke off and some of them went to visit relatives and that sort of thing, but they never reported to school as they were supposed to, and that's the key issue. They are all males ranging in age from 17 to 22, and they had student visas when they arrived at JFK, and that's what they were supposed to...
It's good that no males in that demographic have ever caused trouble in American history. It's good that that's the demographic that's normally known for being stable. I can say that because I have no pretense of objectivity, Bob Costantino.
Do you want me to go Gary Baumgarten on you?
Have we now created that? Is that now a verb?
Yes.
No, not a verb. That would be a state of being. Is a state of being a verb? It's been so long. If one was to go Baumgarten... That is a verb, right? Because it's a state of being.
it would be considered a state of being. I've never even actually met Gary, so I would.
No,
I'm a little reluctant to.
No, it's okay.
Say much about him.
Yeah, but, he'll punch you.
He'll
punch you and then kick your bloated corpse. It's
he's
true.
He's a hardworking fellow.
yes.
Anyway.
No, just go ahead. Go ahead.
See?
Okay.
It's always happened.
I'm sorry.
With you guys.
We've gone so far afield. All right, but so they got three of the guys in custody, presumably they're looking for the rest who were supposed to show up to school and did not. But they're on the case, and did they find that the three were up to no good, or were they just like hanging out at a casino somewhere? You probably said that and I missed it, but
no, they don't indicate, at least in the statements that the FBI released a little earlier today here in Washington, which dealt with the one student who was in Minneapolis. His name is let me get this for you. Actually, it's going to take me a second. Islam Ibrahim Mohammed El Dusuki. He's 21 years old, and he was arrested in Minneapolis. It does not say what he was doing there, except for the fact that he was not visiting family in that area, as the officials had speculated.
Maybe he was going to see Prince.
The two who were found in New Jersey, actually, this was reported a few moments ago.
All right.
So no stronger information is out about.
All right. Well, we will we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll check in with you probably tomorrow or whatever as this unfolds.
Right.
Going to see how everything comes out. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend. We will talk to you very soon.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. Bob Costantini, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill, CNN radio correspondent. All right. We made that guy laugh. We made him lose his composure.
You're breaking him down.
He's more of a docile creature.
Bob Costantini?
Yes.
Yeah, he lacks the New Yorker defense instincts that Gary Baumgarten has. Mm-hmm. Gary Baumgarten, you push him and he just gets all spiky. Bob Costantini, you do it and he just begins giggling like a schoolgirl. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. Dave, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Wrong name, Rick. Sorry.
I swear to God, it says Dave on the screen.
Oh, I thought you said Steve. My apologies. Anywho,
feel shame.
I shall. I am. I'm there. Anyway, hi, Rick.
Don't abuse
No,
that.
We're losing the call.
Stop.
I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry,
Rick,
go ahead.
I was just thinking about you last night. I don't even know why my TiVo did this, but I got O'Reilly's show last night.
I'm sorry.
And I had this cathartic moment where I'm watching him basically berate Art Alexakis. I couldn't figure out who I hated.
Really?
For. Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah, that's totally like the Battle Within kind of a thing, like a who do you root for? What was Art Alexakis doing on the Bill O'Reilly show? Was he sharing his political thoughts?
No, it was more religious-based. The new, I guess you call it a video, that they have just released.
The kids call it a video.
Yeah. Anyway, they put it out, and it's a Christ-like figure walking around slap guns and other assorted things.
I'm sorry, we missed part of your call. Then this is the new Everclear video, and it's Christ slapping who?
Nuns. And
Someone needs attention.
Yeah, it's
how edgy.
It's not good on any level. I can't describe it because it just shows a guy dressed with a crown of thorns running around kind of being a jerk.
Well, I have to say, I went to one of Arnold Zakas' Halloween parties and he did dress as Jesus.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I am kidding you not.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, they do. They do have a lot in common.
Yeah, well,
I don't know where to go with
that. I hate to say, but he did kind of hold his own for a riot.
Well, he's a sharp guy. Look, I will say this. No one has ever accused that guy, Art Alexakis. No one's ever accused him of being dumb. He's a smart guy. Even his detractors will tell you that he's a smart guy, writes a good song. You know, nobody kind of gets to that level of success without kind of having something on the ball. But, you know, the great thing about the O'Reilly factor, as I told Peter Carlin the other day, is the sense that at any moment, O'Reilly might just leap across the desk and just rip out your spine. So that is, I will admit that show is kind of compelling to watch sometimes because you get the feeling that O'Reilly is just one bad moment away from going Baumgarten as they're just beating a guy to death. It's going to happen. So O'Reilly is just going to snap and he's going to pound a guy into dust right there on the show. So it's okay. I am known to watch that show every now and again. So don't feel bad, sir.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
You bet.
There you go. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Well, let's talk about Cynthia McKinney, shall we? The other loser.
Can we, please? Oh, we're going to talk to McCarthy about her later on, too.
Well, she made headlines after she allegedly punched a Capitol Hill police officer as she was attempting to enter a House office building. She's now making new headlines. She lost. She's a loser in yesterday's Democratic primary election against her challenger, Hank Johnson, in Georgia.
To a guy named Hank.
Mm-hmm. In her concession speech, McKinney addressed her belief that there were irregularities in the voting system that made her lose.
Oh, wait, is this number the, five. Is this cut number five? Yes, here we go.
Electronic voting machines are a threat to our democracy.
I do not trust science. I am terrified
screaming amen?
Of mathematics. Uh-huh. I think it's a rule. I think you have to shout amen. Let's listen again.
Electronic voting machines are a threat to our democracy.
I think they were saying, come on now, all my black people. I believe that's what they were saying. I can't prove that. That's what I hear.
They got a number on Josh. He was looking good last night.
Oh, on Rockstar Supernova?
Yeah.
Okay. Josh, the toothy guy that Nate hates?
No, the one who said, come on, all my black people.
Yeah, but Nate hates him because he's a smiler.
I don't know.
From the very first, and how great that you latch right onto the guy that Nate hates, that your boyfriend despises. No, when in the first couple weeks when we were watching this, I remember was it the first week? I think it was the very first episode, and we'll do the full recap at two, but the very first episode of Rockstar Supernova, he's saying She Talks to Angels by the Black Crowes, which is a very kind of soulful song, because he's all about soul. Nate, Sarah's boyfriend, is so great. And I don't mean this in a bad way. He's very glib. And people use that phrase negatively, but it's very, you know what Nate is able to do? He's able to, like Henry Rollins, just do great summations. Like, he can just boil something down in like three words. But the guy came out, and the other great thing about it is that Nate's position never changes. He will sample a second and a half of something in the pop culture, immediately form an opinion, email everybody he knows with that opinion, and then the opinion never changes. Regardless of what new evidence may be introduced, the opinion is rock solid and probably included in his SIG file, in his emails. But Josh came out and he's like, just never mentions the word. And he grins, and Nate's like, he's too smiley. Wham! Turns around, back to the screen, continues drinking. That's it. From that day on, that guy Josh is the smiler to Nate. And so he is shunned from that day forward. I do dig his voice, though. I think he's totally wrong for the band. But I dig his voice. I dig the way he sings. I have since the very beginning.
I didn't mean to derail us so early.
No, it's okay. He did a good job last night.
Tim Ratty.
Meanwhile, Dave Navarro is single again. The rocker who recently split from his wife, Carmen Electrica, reportedly has been dumped by the other woman, too.
Now, who's the other woman? Do we know?
Sarah Howard.
What? You said Jenna Jameson.
He's dating Jenna Jameson.
Well, it says here her name is Sarah Howard.
Now, Jenna Jameson's married.
No, Jenna Jameson's divorced.
Oh, am I headed? Oh,
everyone's getting divorced.
Too much information. Okay.
And Shauna Mochler and Travis Barker.
Okay, let's stop. Stop. Everyone, stop now.
What's going on?
I'm so confused. Dave Navarro had dumped Carmen Electra for Jenna Jameson.
It says here.
Well, that is trading up. That is trading up. I'll give you that right now.
Yeah, because Carmen looks porn, but Jenna does it.
Yeah, and Jenna Jameson is kind of weird looking. I don't want to have a whole discussion about porn because that seems like it's going to end badly, but it will not end happily.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's a little linguistic humor. But Jenna Jameson's kind of weird looking, but she does have a certain kind of sultry, slutty vibe, and not just because she's a porn star. I mean, she personally puts off a certain sexual magnetism. Carmen Electra does not. I don't think Carmen Electra is sexy. I'm not going to say she's not beautiful. She is, I suppose, in some bizarre airbrushed kind of sense, but she's not sexy. There's a difference between best line ever in a Woody Allen film. At least recently, is in Match Point, which you really all should see. You should all see Match Point. But Scarlett Johansson's character makes a great observation when John Rhys. Just talking to myself. Who's the guy? Not John Rhys Davies, but John Rhys Meyers. Is that a guy? Is there an actor, Jonathan Rhys Meyers?
There's a Mike Myers.
Familiar.
Well, whatever. Anyway, he's the guy in Matchpoint, but he says to Scarlett Johansson's character, he says, "You're really beautiful," and she says, "No, I'm not beautiful. I'm sexy." Sexy and beautiful, two totally different things. Carmen Electra, I guess attractive, not sexy at all. I get no sexual vibe from her at all. There's no magnetism there. Jenna Jameson totally has that. So Dave Navarro dumps Carmen Electra for Jenna Jameson. Yes?
Yeah, I have it right here.
Okay, yeah, so
so Jenna Jameson's people have said that, yes, they are in a relationship. Dave Navarro is telling people that, yes, they are too.
Okay, and so Jenna Jameson is divorced?
She's separated.
Separated, okay. All right.
But they still remain the best of friends.
Uh-huh. For the children.
Man, my hatred for Dave Navarro just grows every week. I could not stop yelling at the screen last night.
I liked him a lot at the very beginning. You know, I was talking to Chris Neathen from the Oregonian, from Oregon Live about this. Because Dave, see, you're, Sarah, you're too young. You're too young to understand this. But
he
Dave,
was cool.
He was cool. He,
yeah, I am too young because he's always just been the douchebag that wears way too much eyeliner.
See, here's the thing, and I don't like, I'm not a Jane's Addiction fan. I never really was. They were a little too alt for me and just a little too cool for the room. But I do acknowledge that they're a really important band. They're like the Red Hot Chili Peppers to me. Not a fan. Don't care for them. Don't like to listen to their music. Great, important band. Jane's Addiction was a real watershed. They were a really crucial rock and roll band. And he had all the street cred in the, as Brian Jennings would say, he had all the street cred in the world, because of Jane's Addiction. And he's just squandered all of it. Just squandered it all. And you're right, he just looks like an ass. He just, with every week, he looks more and more and more like an ass. Especially because on Rockstar Supernova, he's so clearly trying to be the Simon Cowell. He is so obviously trying to be so coy and clever and hip and cool, and just doesn't work at all. So, alright. So, but you were claiming, Tim, that Dave Navarro was dumped by somebody else.
Named Sarah Howard.
Who's Sarah Howard?
I have no idea. But that's what it says.
If someone out there can help us keep track of all this, the number is 503.
She now wants nothing to do with him.
733-2970. Sarah Howard, if somebody can, that name sounds familiar.
Ron Howard, does he have a daughter named Sarah Howard?
It's possible.
Mo Howard?
His daughter named Bryce Howard.
Maybe. All right, so if you know who Sarah Howard is, please now to be calling us and telling us. All right, so, well, I mean, like it's not inconceivable that he was dating both of them at once. That does sort of, I mean,
it's not
like he's a really well-grounded fellow. I've told the story of how he's banned from the Playboy Mansion for leaving needles all over one of the rooms. I told you that, right?
No.
I think I told you, but I think it was late in the evening, so I'm not sure you remember it.
Oh, yes, you don't tell me things are supposed to stick.
He should do his needlepoint at home.
Yes, he's banned from the Playboy Mansion because, you know, the deal, not like I've been there, but I mean, you know, the deal.
I didn't know he was a junkie.
Hello, come on. Come on! He was in Jane's Addiction. He's a rock star.
I just don't give him much thought.
They're all
really
junkies. They're all junkies. Here's the, everybody, with the exception of us, CBS Radio, you and everybody in the music world, I'm past being stunned by it because here's the conclusion I've come to. I've come to this realization that everyone in the entertainment business, especially in those in the sort of really glamorous, because radio doesn't really count because we're all lame, but like in the music world and the movie world, everybody does drugs. Everybody is like a junkie. Everybody does. I just think that's the case because I've lost track of the number of stories I've heard from people who are in a position to know where it's like, well, I was at so-and-so's house and they were passing around the cocaine, you know, and it's just, I get the feeling that it really is just not a big deal at all, that it's just sort of a given. But especially if you're a rock star, you know, that's like when Heather Locklear was like, I can't believe Tommy Lee cheated on me. It's like, what right do you, what nerve do you have being shocked that Tommy Lee cheated on you? But you know, when you go to the mansion, everybody knows the deal. You go there and we've all seen Entourage. There's hundreds of girls and there's the grotto. Everybody knows about the grotto. And then there's, you know, many little rooms, that you can sort of go into for privacy and so forth. Then of course, Dave Navarro goes to the mansion. He's got no problem, pulling a bird, as they say in Britain. So he'll, you know, get some girl, blah, 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 goes down to the room, great old time, whatever. That's fine. Except later when like the cleaning staff and imagine having to be the cleaning staff at the Playboy Mansion. Boy, that's just your head to toe in a Devo suit. But the cleaning staff is going through after one of the parties, cleaning out the various rooms, however one does that. And they go into, let's go into the room that Dave Navarro was in. And they walk in and just dirty needles everywhere. Dirty needles, which that right there is like, that's case study number one and why I don't do drugs. I'm not a Puritan or a moralizer about it. All I'm saying is, when they say drugs make you do things that you would not normally do, here's what I think of. I don't think of like sitting in a flop house somewhere and squeezing toothpaste into the cracks in the wall so the cockroaches can't spy on you. I think of like Ace Frehley waking up one morning and going, you know what? I'm tired of being in KISS. I want to leave KISS and be an underpaid solo star with no money. You know, that's that you would make that decision. Here's the other thing I think of. I think about Dave Navarro being at the Playboy Mansion, surrounded by 5,000 of the hottest women on planet Earth, and instead wanting to sit in a small little dark room somewhere jabbing needles into his skin. That's what he thinks is a better time. Well, I could have sex with hundreds of girls tonight, or I could just stay in the dungeon and poke holes through my flesh. That's why I don't do drugs, because your priority system becomes a little skewed. But he's banned from the Playboy Mansion, so What was my point with all this? So he's just scummy and just weird and freaky and, you know, so I know, and he's an ass. He comes off as an ass. With every passing week, he's more of an ass on the show.
I still don't understand why he feels the need to have, like, why does he get so much commentary on a show that doesn't have anything to do with him?
Seriously.
It really bothers me.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any say in the decision-making process. I don't think they should let him speak so much.
I want more commentary from Jason Newsted. Mm-hmm. That's the guy I like a lot. Mm-hmm. All right, so anyway, so Dave Navarro, single, girls.
Meanwhile, Jessica Simpson's romance with Zach Braff isn't going too
what?
Well.
What? Sarah is horrified. Sarah is
because
looking...
I just got into Scrubs, so now I have a personal relationship with him.
Of course, now you're lovers. Sarah is the look on Sarah's face is one of both stunned at the news and then like your expression can only be summed up as what? Where have I been all this time?
Yeah.
Because we pride ourselves on being
Mandy
ahead of the curve.
Mandy Moore is one thing. I like that girl.
What?
Him and Mandy Moore dated for like 2 years.
Zach Braff and Mandy Moore?
Yes.
I guess in my head she's, I guess I've just got the Entourage thing in my head
exactly.
Where she's with what's his name.
No, they compared it actually to the Entourage thing. I guess he was pining away for her just like, like Vincent Chase was pining for her
stupid.
In Entourage.
Who pines for Mandy Moore? Anyway, and so she's with who?
She's with this, Sims fellow.
Zach Braff is with Jessica Braff. Simpson? Boy, you know, here's
David Spade wasn't available.
It's gotta be weird to be Jessica Simpson, Jessica? Yes. To be Jessica Simpson, to suddenly be the ugly sister. That's a, you know what it is? That's a tortoise in the hare thing. Where you're just cruising along in the lane, you're like, I'm the pretty sister, I'm the pretty, zoom. And you look up and there's Ashley like 3 miles ahead of you, and suddenly you got the weird bottle chin, and like your face is all square, and you look like a lantern. Cause Ashley Simpson, when's the last time you saw side by side of those guys? Ashley Simpson is suddenly twice as hot as Jessica Simpson. Equally good body, far better face. So I guess you gotta pull a man while you can, sister. Especially because Nick Lachey is hooking up, is with what's her name?
Vanessa
de Milano.
Yeah.
And what is she? She's a model or something?
No, she's an MTV VJ and she's also on, Entertainment Tonight.
Mm. When did this program just degenerate into nothing? But this is like reading one of those soap
well,
opera magazines.
Well, Jessica is lonely and needy. She's having a hard time dealing with the fact that her ex-husband is in love with MTV's Vanessa Minnillo.
The best part is that Sarah laughed out loud at that.
Well, because you know
lonely
she was the one messing around.
Was she? Well, because she was getting the nod with Johnny Knoxville, wasn't she?
Yeah, she. It's rumored.
And Dane Cook.
Yeah.
Who's married.
Yeah. No, he has a live-in girlfriend. He wasn't married.
Oh, I see. Okay. Maybe they had an understanding. Like what's it? Who were we just talking about the other day that had an understanding? Some celebrity. I don't know what we're talking about now. There was some, they had the discussion the other day about there's somebody, this couple who has an arrangement. It was some, God, who wasn't that? I wanted to say Clint Howard, but of course that's wrong. We've never discussed Clint Howard in any way. What?
That's Ron Howard's younger brother.
I remember what conversation you're talking about, but it wasn't on the air.
No, I'm not talking, okay. Sarah's mouthing the name of someone that we know. This was an on-air discussion we were having.
Okay.
About a celebrity.
Yeah,
but and
this
I think
was about a celebrity.
We...
What are you looking at me for? Tim, continue.
I'm not saying another word.
Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn are officially engaged, according to the wedding planners at Us Weekly.
I cannot believe... I'm sorry. Be very quiet here.
They became engaged June 27th after a week spent in Mexico. Vince got down on one knee and said, blah, 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 blah.
Are you just doing this to see if we're listening? Who proposed to who?
Vince Gill got down on one knee.
Vince Gill to who? To Amy Grant?
I'm sorry, Vince Vaughn.
What are you talking about?
That country jock is coming back.
Oh, okay.
I called him Vince Gill, but I meant to call him Vince Vaughn.
I quit listening like half an hour ago, so I think we're all okay.
Oh, I'm just sitting here babbling to myself. You're passing notes back and forth here.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Sarah was checking yes for, yes, my friend wants to go out with you after study hall. No, Sarah and I had our
wires.
Sarah and I had our wires crossed just now because I think we were having two different conversations.
Yes.
And neither of us,
I don't really know what you're talking about. Okay. And so I think we've just passed an open, like, we're going to move on. Will Smith. That's who it was.
Oh, okay.
Dave, hello, sir.
Jessica Simpson?
Dave, Sarah and I were talking about like 9 different things at once. They were all blending together there.
Yep.
And I don't think any of us knew what the other person was talking about just now. It was a whole lot of, you know what it was just now? It was like a Three's Company episode where Jack is talking about hanging a shower curtain, but Mr. Roper thinks they're talking about having a threesome. Sarah and I were talking about 2 different things that I don't think we understand. But it was Will Smith. We were talking about the rumor was that Will Smith and Mrs. Smith had an understanding.
Yeah, and that Tom Cruise's.
Because the Cruise baby is
Will Smith's child.
Yes. There's a racial inconsistency, someone said, in the child.
That was the rumor.
So the rumor was, which again is someone speculating, we have no knowledge that that is true. I am not in any way saying that is the case. Someone is speculating that Will Smith and his beloved had some sort of an understanding about the openness of their relationship.
Right.
Okay. Let's end this call now. Thank you, Dave.
Do we have
a CNN
correspondent waiting?
We do. That's Ed McCarthy.
All right.
Also, we're like 14 minutes late on a break.
Let's just go to Ed.
You don't want to sit and have an awkward conversation anymore?
Well, he's calling us from all the way across the country.
Do I need to put my earmuffs on again? All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Live from the dirty South. What? Okay. Ed McCarthy. How are you, Ed?
I'm good, Rick. What's going on today?
Oh, all kinds of things.
Some of them I want to know, some of them I don't want to know, right?
That's exactly the case. In no way could you be more correct than that. Let me just be up front with you about a couple things right now. It's not that we don't enjoy speaking to you. We do, and we enjoy, as the British say, having speaks with you here on this radio program. Also, though, today you have the added advantage to us of not being Gary Baumgarten. Because Gary Baumgarten has... He's gone a little crazy recently. Well, I was talking to Bob Costantini about this. Don't get me wrong. We love Gary. We've been talking to Gary for like 6 years on this program. But Gary Baumgarten does this thing where about twice a year, he will just carry some secret seething grudge about a story. And you won't really realize that he feels that way until you mention the story. And then he will just uncork this long, angry tirade about the subject. And we sort of stumbled into one of those yesterday about Joe Lieberman. Because I... See, you know what I'm... It's an East... It's got to be a New York thing. I had made the observation that Joe Lieberman was going to lose, and badly and definitively. And
I know
that
you were right.
Yeah, and that no amount of spin, no amount of Joe-mentum was going to save that campaign. That Joe Lieberman was hosed. And I made this observation quite casually. Man, and Baumgarten, it really, again, it's like I'd pushed his kid down a hill.
You know, I'm eating crow today, too, because I really thought Lieberman might come back.
No, not going to happen. Never going to happen. He will never win anything again higher than a city position. I'm telling you that right now.
You don't think he'll win as an independent?
No. And here's why. It's... Because in this, and I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who's kind of a political junkie, and again, this is not a judgment on Joe Lieberman as a man, a husband, a father, a person, even as, it's not even really a judgment on him as a politician in the sense of what he has done or achieved or accomplished. I am simply saying that in the American political system, perception, it paces reality. And you know, people believe you are what you act as though you are. And Joe Lieberman, for lack of a better and more graceful term, puts off a very beta male, loser vibe. And I'm not trying to be cruel about that. It is simply the case. He does not put off the aura. Let's contrast this. Contrast Joe Lieberman. Aesthetics, and when I say aesthetics, I don't mean physically. I mean just his vibe, his personality. Contrast Joe Lieberman with perhaps the best example, which is Bill Clinton, or Joe Lieberman with Howard Dean. Joe Lieberman, Howard Dean, Bill Clinton, in a lineup. You hear those three guys talk, give the same speech. Two of those guys give off a winner vibe. One does not. You know? And that's what matters to Americans in the television and internet era. That's just a fact.
Well, that's true. You make a very valid point there, because that is it. It's all image today.
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying that that's good, that's bad. It's simply the reality that Joe Lieberman does not give off a powerful or confident enough vibe, I think, at this point, to survive a whole lot of election cycles at this point in the American political system. That's just my read on it. So, Catherine McKinney, whatever you think about her, she certainly had confidence to burn. I mean,
well,
she was not a different story. Yeah, she was not a shrinking violet in any way. Let's talk about her a little bit, because had you expected Cynthia McKinney to come along?
A while ago I did, until I started seeing how deep-rooted this situation was, and I think it was mainly due to the Capitol Police situation. So, you know, she just really, you know, she came off last night. She didn't even mention the guy's name that beat her, Hank Johnson. But it turns out that, you know, she's not going to be around. Now, she lost before the previous election, not the last one, but
right.
the previous one.
Right.
She kind of runs in cycles, too, and comes back. So, you know, you just don't know how this thing is going to run with her. I mean, you never would say that she's gone forever.
Well, that was going to be my question. Is somebody who has, and I don't pretend to know a lot about her, but she does seem very fiery, very passionate, very, you know, she certainly got a core base that really digs her because she's so outspoken and so blunt. So the question is, what does Cynthia McKinney do at this point in her career? What is next for her?
That's a good question. I don't know, but she's certainly not going to be a member of Congress right now. So whether, you know, she'll find something in some kind of political action committee or whatever, you know, we'll have to wait and see what she's going to do. But she was pretty, you know, she's pretty miserable toward the press. I mean, she feels as though the media just, you know, absolutely crucified her. And, you know, mostly people, when they put themselves in positions where they get in a lot of trouble, politically, and, you know, the image thing starts falling apart, you know, who are they going to blame?
Yeah, it's very straight. Let's quickly segue to something else. And this is just a personal question that I have. I'm curious about this. We're talking about this BP oil shutdown, and I only kind of know what the news has talked about this, but I'm just going to read here that from the CNN prep sheet. BP, which is British Petroleum, BP's announcement that it shut down one of its most productive oil pipelines, and this is the one in Alaska, right?
Yeah.
Due to corrosion, has many wondering how this could possibly happen at such a bad time. So this is the thing where it just kind of came out of nowhere that this pipe, they had to turn it off, and this is what, 8% of our oil or something comes from this?
Yeah, well, there's going to be a federal investigation on this thing, and of course the governor's already pushing to get some kind of money back from this thing. He's already got a hiring freeze in place. This thing apparently had not been checked in 14 years.
Well, okay.
The caribou are munching on it all the way.
Yes, yeah, seriously.
Well, you know, the way we're looking at it right now is that they had a whistleblower in there, and they said, you know, these guys aren't really going in and doing the job here and putting the stuff they need to go in there to get these pipelines straightened out. So they're under investigation. I don't know exactly what's going to happen with that, but you know, you guys are going to be hurting because you get all the gas from the Alaska pipeline.
And so my question is, because, and to whatever extent you can answer this, the question is one of those things I've always wanted to know, and there's really nowhere. I don't even know where you call to find the answer to this. So I thought I'd ask you. So we hear a lot about, well, we got to reduce our dependence on overseas oil in Saudi Arabia and the Middle East is where we get the oil from. And then you hear about this, though. So my question is, of the oil we use here in America, what percent comes from American territories or the continental United States, and what percent comes from across the ocean?
It's 8%.
Really? So 8% period. So 92% of our oil. But what about like
from
Texas?
Other places.
And what about like Texas, though?
Texas, all that usually heads up to the East Coast and up to the Midwest.
But I mean, but so in America, though, as a whole, what percentage of oil in America do you think has to come from over the ocean?
Oh, 90%.
Really? So Texas, Alaska, all of that, it still covers only about 10% of our oil consumption here.
10 to 15%, exactly. Right.
No lie, for like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I've wondered that, but there's just, like, how do you Google such a question? It's, you know, and who would you believe the answer? But you, Ed McCarthy, I knew that you would be able to clear this up.
Do you find yourself, like, comparatively shopping now for gasoline?
I find myself.
Just out of principle?
You know what I really don't, and I'll tell you why. Because what I find myself doing is trying to ride my bike a lot. I bicycle a lot, and I try not to be uppity about it, but I bicycle a lot just because I get road rage really badly. It is faster, you know, and I'd like to not die of heart disease and so forth. But it is also really satisfying just to not be given those guys like the $45 or whatever it takes. Even my tiny little car, I have a little economy car, and it costs like $45 to fill it. And
me too.
I don't comparison shop for gas for the same reason that I don't really complain about gas prices a lot, because what are you going to do, man? There's nothing I can do about it. It's going to be a couple cents either way. It's going to be a screwing either way. It's just we're talking about how hard of a screwing, you know.
Well, that's the point. But it's become a principal thing with me. You know, and I look at the thing and I say, look at these guys, so they're hanging up here this high, and the other guys can sell it a little bit cheaper, you know.
Right.
It's just kind of, I say, you know what? I'm going to avoid the other guys, but that's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, it's a personal little protest of mine to bicycle by a gas station and just give them a big middle finger on my way to work.
We're driving less anyway, no matter how you look at it. I mean, a lot of people are really starting to change their driving habits, and, you know, I do the same thing with you know, if you got things to pick up, you know, do it. Do it.
Yeah, no, that's...
Go to Target and buy it in bulk or something, come back home, and then you don't have to worry about, you know, making a million trips to the store. You know?
That's what I'm saying, brother. So it's, yeah, it is a little personal victory for me every time I can avoid giving them money. I really am with you on that. All right.
You're correct on the middle finger.
Hey, would you like to hear the sounder we play whenever we have a caller we want to get rid of?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to use this now to simulate what it would be like if you were one of those callers. Now, you are not because we enjoy your calls, but this is a guy created this yesterday because sometimes there are callers that we wish to gracefully get rid of, and I'm just too polite to hang up. So this is what it sounds like. Oh, it sounds like there's some sort of phone difficulty. Damn, they're gone. All right. Thank you, Ed McCarthy.
You betcha, Rick.
CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy in Atlanta. There you go. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
How you doing?
Fabulous.
We're breaking now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Come back with more from Tim Riley, also CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. We have the verdict on whether those Gibson tapes are going to come our way or not. Later on, Rockstar Recap with Kristen from Accounting. And we'll try to get to It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard and Tim Riley as the Eskimo. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Yeah.